Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, Maddie Alm, registered dietitian and former professional runner. Today's guest is Alexa Ephraimson. Alexa is a Washington native, and she went pro out of high school at 17 after setting the high school records in the 1600 and the 3K and winning state and Nike Cross National champs. She was a two-time member of Junior Team USA and the Junior American record holder in the 1500. She went on to become a senior member of Team USA in 2019 at the Pan Am Games, where she won bronze in the 1500 and was a 10-time qualifier for U.S. championships. Alexa retired in 2022 from professional running and went on to graduate school to get her master's in nutritional sciences and nutrigenomics. She completed her dietetic internship in May and will be taking her RD licensure exam next month. I hope you enjoy today's episode with Alexa. All right, Alexa, welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited that you're here today. It's not often that I get to talk to other elite runners who are also in a career in nutrition, which is so fun and exciting that you're pursuing your RD credential and you'll be getting that really soon.
Yeah. I'm really excited to start this next chapter.
Yes, it's a very fun chapter, but I'm a little biased, obviously. well, let's start with overall who you are and how you got into the sport of running.
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Alexa Ephraimson. I grew up in Washington, just outside the Portland metro area. Getting into running, I was a soccer player, which it seems like most runners start as soccer players at some point. Once high school came around, I was never a good soccer player. It's just because I had a bit of speed. So I joined the cross country team and it sort of blew up from there. I did fairly well starting that first season. And then fast forward a few years later, I signed a professional contract with Nike the summer after my junior year. So right before I go into my senior year. And this was in 2014. So it was before NIL. And so I had to choose between running collegiately or giving up that collegiate eligibility. And I ultimately decided to give up my collegiate eligibility and go pro for a myriad of reasons, but the main ones were I was running really well with my high school coach, so I wanted to stick with him, and getting paid is nice too. Yeah. and so that was sort of like the main reasons. It was also like a strike while the iron is hot. I was getting some cool contract offers and I said, I don't know if these will still be here in 4 or 5 years time if I were to go collegiate. And who knows how I would do over the next few years. I signed a professional contract when I was 17 with Nike, and I ended up being with them for 8 years. I left my high school coach before 2020, and I joined what was Oregon Project and turned into Union Athletic Club, and I was with Pete Julian, and I quite loved that team. And then in 2022, 3 years ago now, I decided to retire. It was for a few different reasons, but going into that season, I wasn't anticipating retiring, but I hadn't been running super well, and I wasn't loving it anymore, and so I decided to retire, and then I figured, I've asked myself what I wanted to do next, because throughout my career, I went to school for my undergrad and I got my undergrad in finance. But that was just like when you're 18, 19, you don't know what you want to do with your life. And that was the one business class that gave me some sort of interest. And so I got my undergrad in finance, but do not want to be anything with finance now. And so once I retired, I just gave myself a couple months to figure out what was next. And I really struggled with nutrition and weight and body image throughout my career. And I always told myself I would give back to the sport after I did retire, because running can be very, very selfish. And so I started, I got a bunch of prereqs in to start a grad program in the Master of Science in Nutrition and Nutrigenomics. And just graduated like a few weeks ago. So ready to become an RD.
Amazing. So many things and such a short recap of an incredible career and one that's continuing, just looking a little bit different. And it's so funny, we have that in common with soccer, starting out with soccer. I also realized that I wasn't actually good at soccer. I was just good at the running part. And so I could get to the ball before everybody else, but then I was like, not that good. So yeah, I kind of had the same origin story of running, realizing like, oh, okay, maybe it's just the running piece. But different from you know, I wasn't that good starting out. You immediately, sounds like, kind of found this success in running and had the opportunity to go pro fairly early on into becoming a runner. So what was that transition like for you? When did you kind of realize like, oh, this is actually what I want to be doing, not soccer?
I think, I mean, just like you want to be good at whatever you choose, and so like I was top of varsity my freshman year of cross country, and I was like, okay, this is actually sort of cool. And then as the seasons progressed and I started like racing with the top girls, I was like, oh, this is something that I can really blossom into. So that was part of it. I also got some really cool opportunities to race some really big meets pretty early on in my high school career. What used to be the Dream Mile, it was hosted by Adidas in New York when they had the New York Dream Diamond League. I got invited to that my freshman year. I got invited to Millrose, and I got invited to the New York Diamond League my junior year. So it was a few like just great time, great place, all everything sort of lined up that gave me the opportunity to run those really fast times as well. Being able to, one, compete at the national level pretty early on in high school, not just like my junior or senior year, and just being able to sort of rub elbows with pros in high school before I started talking to shoe companies was sort of when I was like, okay, this could be something that is actually a thing, because I didn't know professional running was a thing probably before my junior year of high school.
Yeah, I was kind of the same way. I didn't really know much about the sport. And I think for you, like running really fast is such an understatement. You ended up becoming the US junior record holder, which currently still stands today. So your rise to, I would say, fame, for lack of a better term, it was pretty quick and pretty sudden. And you've mentioned, you know, struggling a little bit with nutrition, with body image, and getting into that high level at such a young age. I'm curious, what was your first experience like when it came to nutrition, or, you know, working with somebody who was helping to give you some guidance in nutrition?
So I didn't work with a dietitian at all over my entire career, and it wasn't until I joined Pete's team that I was introduced to a nutritionist who really wasn't helpful in helping me recognize the root cause of my struggles, which was with body image and weight and confidence, and how much that was all focused on the scale. So my first year being pro, it was my senior year of high school, and I was running really well. I was just doing what I normally do. And then I went to college and I started to gain weight. But there was a few different reasons with that. It wasn't just like, oh, you're out of the house, you're not eating what you normally do. I didn't get my first period until I was like 17 and a half. So it was really, really late as well. So with that comes a lot of just hormonal and very normal and natural body changes, and I didn't really know how to handle that, I suppose. And then part of it was also I'm in a high school 18-year-old body racing against these women that have these super strong, mature bodies that are 10, 12 years older than me. So that was another part of it as well, was the comparison piece to it. Some very, looking back on it, poor nutrition advice from my coach, who was not qualified, and then not working with a dietitian at all to understand these hormonal changes with all that. So those were some of my first experiences with it. And then throughout my entire career was just an absolute struggle with weight and body image. I always blamed myself for not being able to stay at my race weight, which was just a number that my coach had given me and was stuck in my mind for 8 years. And so I would go through the cycle of gaining 10 pounds in the off season to then have to lose it, over the course of the next 6, 7, 8 months. But then during that time, I would lose my period for 6 months of the year. I would be in a calorie deficit to try and lose that weight. And all that like mental stress and pressure and anxiety that I put on myself to lose that weight was a huge detriment, not only to my mental health and well-being, but I'm pretty sure to my performance as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure that was a lot to navigate, you know, going through puberty essentially for the first time at 17. That is probably a more isolating experience because, you know, a lot of your other peers had maybe gone through that earlier, and now you're with peers who aren't going through those changes. And not to mention, you know, training as a professional at 18. Like you said, you're surrounded by women who are older and in more mature bodies. So how do you feel like your relationship with food was prior to going to college and going pro versus what do you feel like, what was kind of a turning point for you in that relationship with food?
So I felt like before I had gone to college, it wasn't even really a thought. It was just eat what I want, when I want, when I'm hungry. And then when I started to weigh myself, it turned into weighing myself every day for years and years. That was definitely the turning point. And that's when the blame and the guilt and the anxiety and the like mental spiraling started, I think. And so I don't want to tell anyone like, don't weigh yourself, because that can be a benchmark. But I think the amount of power we give to the number on the scale is way too much. Like, there are so many other things that you can focus on besides weight when it comes to performance. But weight always seems to be the one that we blame.
Yes, 100%. And I'm so glad that you said that, because I think that weighing yourself is sort of like the gateway to struggling with your relationship with food and body image. And it, like, you're exactly right. That number in our minds holds so much power. And if we change the number, that means we're doing something good or bad. It's never a neutral thing. We always put some type of emotional response on that number, or we label it as good or bad. And like you said, that number, you know, from a, you know, quote unquote race weight standpoint, you had a number in your head that a coach had mentioned one time, probably didn't even remember what they told you. But when you're that athlete and you hear that number, it really sticks in your head. And it's so hard to get that number out of your head that even if you know that it's maybe not the right thing, it's just so stuck in your mind as that benchmark. And so that experience is so common, I think, with young runners. And, you know, now that you have kind of come out of that, what's something maybe early on that you could have caught, or maybe that someone else could have said to you to help kind of stop that train in its tracks?
I think runners in particular, but young athletes in general, they just want to get better, and they want to be disciplined, and they are usually self-motivated and self-directed, and they're really enthusiastic. So if they think that I can do anything and everything, and if that includes not eating like foods with sugar, or if that means skipping meals, or if that means cutting X, Y, and Z out, then they're going to do it. But I think if someone had just said like, look, the way you're approaching food and nutrition is hurting you more than it's helping you, and that there's another way to do it, and what you're doing is not the right way. Because when you have success at a certain weight or a certain nutrition, or even just a certain training method, if you have that success, you're like, this is the only way. There's nothing else I can do that's going to get me any better besides doing more of what I'm doing. So if someone had just said, look, what you're doing right now is not helping you, there is another way, and this other way is the right way, then that would have been really helpful. But I look back and I say, would I have even listened to this person if they had said this to me, you know? I don't know. I was so in my lane that what I was doing and what my coach was doing was right, and there was no other way. It would have been hard to like sort of get into that. But if they could have said, you can be better if you do X, Y, and Z, then maybe.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. And I've had other people on the podcast say a similar thing. Like, I don't know if I would have listened at that point, which is so true. Like, when you're set in your ways and you think that what you're doing is the right thing, I think especially when we're young and we see that success, we're like, this is the only way. This is the way it always has to be. Not realizing that sometimes that one way maybe works temporarily, but can be really detrimental in the long term. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, you know, not getting a period until you were 17 and then kind of losing it on and off when you were training hard. I'm curious if at that time, did you know that that was a red flag, that that was something that wasn't supposed to be happening?
Oh, I thought it was great. I was like, oh, I must be fit.
Yeah.
You know, so that's like another thing I wish I would have learned is like, no, when you get amenorrhea, like your recovery time increases and your neuromuscular like elasticity like that decreases. So there, it's not a good thing at all on any front. So, but I was just like, oh, well, if I don't have a period, I am fit and I run fast. It's just like that. Is it correlation, causation? But once again, I didn't realize how much I was struggling with all of it until I like was out of it, if that makes sense.
Definitely. And just learning, you know, what you've learned now through all your years of schooling and, you know, becoming a dietitian, it is a really eye-opening experience where you look back and you're like, oh, wow, those are things that maybe I could have done differently. And but it's hard to know in the moment because it's not done intentionally. It's not done with bad intentions either. It's done thinking that this is the right way to do things. And it sounds like you had those messages coming from people that you trusted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say also that yes, there is a black and white to it, but there was also so many different factors that went into it as well, like comparison. So I would compare not only myself to others, but myself to like last year's peak performance or how much I weighed at that peak performance. So not only on a fitness level, but also on a weight level. And then also there's my confidence. Of course, you're going to be more confident if one, you're running faster and you look stronger, leaner, faster, right? So that was probably another really big red flag is that my confidence wasn't being derived from my training and performances. It was off the number on the scale, which didn't seem like a red flag at the time, but is 100% is, because then that means that confidence is fluctuating just as easily as the scale fluctuates.
Definitely. Yeah, it's sort of a, like we keep saying, an arbitrary way to feel ready to compete or to feel fit. It's fleeting. And I think there's so many other things we can gain confidence from and really feel prepared from doing aside from just what do I look like? What does the number on the scale look like? Which is really hard in this sport. It's a big, you know, body image issue sport. There's a lot of athletes that struggle. Part of that, you know, the uniforms and being on the start line. And so for you, when you were a teenage athlete competing with these older women, what was that like for you? How did that impact your relationship with body image or food or both?
I don't think I internalized it as much until I started forcing that relationship on myself, like with the weighing and with the counting calories and with the body checking in the mirror. I think it was more, it wasn't necessarily comparing to the other girls, and I'm sure it was to some degree, but it was more so my doing and my coach's talk in my ear of, you need to be this weight, this is why you're not running well, things like that.
Which is really hard to hear when you're already struggling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you're young too, like I said, a lot of athletes, particularly runners, have that type A, like, I want to get approval from authority and I want to be doing well and I want to get this external validation for what I'm like working so hard at. Which I didn't realize was an issue either until later on when I was like, how am I going to measure success? It's not going to be through running anymore. So, which is a little bit later on, but it still all comes back to trying to find these measures of success and saying, oh, here's this number I can base it off of.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I think there's a lot of personality traits that overlap with runners and people who struggle with fueling and eating disorders. There's that kind of like strive for perfection and mm-hmm. needing to kind of feel in control of things, you know, wanting mm-hmm. to please people around you. Those are all things that can make us higher risk people for disordered eating and eating disorders. On top of that, being in an environment that often kind of facilitates that poor relationship with food. So it's a hard environment to navigate, and I would never blame a young runner for struggling with that because there hasn't really been a lot of resources available for young mm-hmm. athletes to navigate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with it. But like I had mentioned earlier, I only blamed myself. I thought, if I can't control my weight, like how can I perfect my craft and my profession when it is my fault, but it wasn't my fault because I didn't have the education around what I needed to do and probably what I was doing, skipping meals, not feeling properly afterwards, was making the situation worse. Not because my body was going into the super stressed out state, which is not only hurting like the number on the scale, but also my performance, which then turned into my mental health, and it all ties in together.
It does, yeah. And I think something that runners often overlook is how these struggles impact their relationship with the sport. So how did that affect your relationship with running, and did it impact your love for the sport?
I think ultimately in the end it did. Retired at 25, and I always thought I'd go into like my 30s and have a really long and decorated career. And I was in a race, and there was a lot of other factors going into it, but I was in a race in Nashville. It was in the middle of the season, and I had just thought, like, I don't want to do this anymore. And that's sort of the moment that I had decided to retire. And I guess I never attributed it to the struggle with food and how that influenced my love for the sport, but I didn't love the sport anymore. I think it comes down to why you do your sport and what your values are within your sport. Because for some people, it is the competition. For some people, it's the social side of it. For some people, it's the how can I challenge and grow in different ways. And that was what the sport was for me, was how can I grow as a person? And I thought that I had stopped. I thought I had like grown as much as that I could in the sport, and I wasn't going to get any more out of the sport. And that's ultimately why I thought I stopped loving it. But I think it probably was part of feeling like I was fighting against my body for so long and how it wasn't fun anymore. Which, I mean, some people, if they're at the elite level, might not think of it as fun or think it needs to be fun, but it most definitely should be fun. 100%. Yes.
I fully agree with you. Running is supposed to be fun, and I think it's a good way to connect with yourself and get the best out of yourself, but we absolutely sometimes take that a little bit too far, and it can kind of spiral a little bit for sure. So I'm curious, just kind of thinking back to high school Alexa, if there's any other high school runner who's listening right now, is there any advice you can give them on how to balance that desire for immediate success with wanting to do things the right way or having that longevity? Because I think young athletes especially, it's so hard to think big picture long term. Like, I want to have good bone density. I want to be able mm-hmm. to have children, you know, things mm-hmm. like that yeah. we're not thinking about at 14, 15, 16. But yeah. unfortunately, sometimes decisions at that age do impact those lifestyle goals down the road.
Yeah. And you make a super great point. Like, I didn't really care about my long-term health when I was in my teenage years. I was like, I only care about success right now. But if I were to give advice to a younger athlete, I would say the two things. One, nutrition is not something that you can perfect, and proper nutrition is adding to what you eat. It's not taking food away. And I think that if you are pursuing performance and we focus on the food or the supplements or the phytochemicals that we can add to our nutrition, it will have a significant impact on our physical and psychological health compared to when we eliminate foods, which also has a, how I like to think of it is like we have the foods that we can add and we can have a much bigger uptick. Whereas if we try and take away foods, you might have a little uptick, but the amount of stress and anxiety that you have around eliminating foods and creating this black and white is going to have way more of a detriment to you than any sort of boost in performance you can have. Partially, we want to eliminate foods because we want to feel in control, coming back to that personality of it, but it's going to hurt you in the long run. Honestly, in the short run as well, because you're setting yourself up for failure, then it will have any sort of benefit.
Absolutely. And I love how you said it's about adding, not taking away. I just talked with Kara about that a couple weeks ago. And that's, you know, most runners go to what can I take away from my diet to become a better runner? They're not thinking about it in terms of what can I add? What can I increase? Or because that's just not something we've been taught as a society is the right thing to do. We've always been taught more is bad, less is good. And that's really not the case, and especially for athletes. And I also love how you said nutrition's not something that you perfect, because I think that's something that holds a lot of athletes back from working on their fueling. We are perfectionists, like we said earlier, and we're so worried about getting it wrong or doing it the wrong way that a lot of times athletes are like, well, I'm just not even going to try because it's so overwhelming. So giving yourself permission to get it wrong, I think, is part of the process.
Yeah, 100%. And something is always going to be better than nothing. But just, and you probably do need a therapist or psychologist if you're going to talk about how you want like perfectionism and black and white and feeling in control. But that was definitely because we use the scale as a form of control. And that's the more you try to control food and your scale, or in your weight, the more it's going to control you.
Absolutely. And I'm curious, when you were going through all of this, what was the food noise like in the back of your head? This is something I talk to a lot of athletes about, where when we're so focused on doing the right things with fueling, we don't realize how much mental energy that takes up to be thinking about constantly. So is that something that you experienced?
100%. It felt like it was all I thought about. I felt like it was in between meals, it was at meals, it was at night, whether it was talking about food or weight or every time I went to the bathroom and looking in the mirror, it was so constant, but it was normalized because it was just what I had been dealing with for so long. And once again, you don't know if you may recognize that you're struggling, but sometimes it doesn't even seem like it's a bad thing. You're like, oh, I'm just being really diligent on my food and nutrition right now. So it was so loud all the time. And then I would get super excited at the end of the season and eat whatever I wanted to, and then feel guilty and go into that binge and restrict cycle again, which is common not only just for athletes, but for many other people. It was really loud.
Really loud, and does make it hard to enjoy anything else outside of sport and running. And you mentioned like running is a selfish sport. And I think that that's so true in some ways for sure, where when you're dedicating yourself to the craft, even if we are doing things the right way, you know, it's a lot of time and energy. But especially if we maybe take it too far and are dealing with this food noise, it really does take away from our ability to be present and have strong connections with those around us.
100%. But when you're young, you don't really see the value in that. You're like, oh, my family will always be there. My friends will always be there. But you might become a worse daughter or son. You might become a worse friend. You might become a worse sibling. And maybe that's something that you don't value, but it should be. I think, at least.
And that was something you had mentioned kind of with retirement, which, you know, I want us to get into that as well. But before that, you know, when you were transitioning into college, not having a team around you, this is something I always wonder for young athletes that go pro out of high school. Was that a decision that you're happy with? Is that anything? I hate saying, like, do you regret don't mean it in that way. But I'm curious if you felt like you, would you have chosen the college running experience or the way that you had done things, or maybe pros and cons of both, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what I don't know. So I don't know it would have been to be on a team. But I will say, when I did join a team 6 years later after I signed, it was a lot more difficult because I felt like I was going onto a college team, constantly comparing myself to everyone else, and not in a good way, in a, oh, I should be doing what they're doing and I should be doing what they're doing, and not focused on what I was doing whatsoever. And so that was a whole new set of struggles in itself that I almost had in a delayed way because I had never been on a team. Which once again comes back to my confidence not being rooted in what I was doing. It was rooted in comparison and all these external validators. And so I wish that I did join a team sooner, I guess. But I did get some really cool experiences that I wouldn't have gotten if I was on a college team, like traveling internationally, going to all these really cool meets, things like that. So there's always pros and cons with it. Ultimately, I'm happy with my decision because I think I have some really cool experiences, and I think I grew in ways that I never would have if I was on a college team and went through the NCAA.
Of course. Yeah. And like you said, there's always going to be like pros and cons. You don't know what you don't know. But mm-hmm. I think like the NIL idea, I hadn't even thought of that. Like the opportunity mm-mm. to earn money wasn't there when, you know, we were going through high school and into college, mm-hmm. whereas now there's an opportunity to be able to do both, which I think is mm-hmm. so great for young runners.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's really great. If that was the situation, I think I would have done that.
So were you in college the whole time when you were running professionally, or what did that transition look like for you getting your degree at the same time as having this professional running career?
Yeah, so I would say I had a relatively normal college experience. I would take a full class load in the fall, and then in the spring, I would just take like one or two classes. So it took me 5.5 years to get my undergrad. And then I was traveling a lot in the winter and spring doing altitude camps and things like that. So I'd usually do an online course of some kind in the spring. But I lived in the dorms my freshman year, and I lived in a house my junior and senior year. And so in that regard, it was pretty, and I was living with runners too. I lived with the girls on the cross country team. So it's not like they were rowdy or anything. It was a pretty normal experience on that front. It just took me a little bit longer to get my undergrad.
Which is understandable. You were balancing a lot of things at once throughout your whole college career, which is hard to do. And so you ultimately, you said you retired at 25 a couple of years ago in 2022, mm-hmm. And you said you were kind of surprised. So I'm interested to hear what led to your retirement. What was that decision like for you?
Yeah, so I joined a union athletic club at the end of 2020. So 2021 was a huge transition year, getting on a new team, a new coach, a new living situation, just new everything. And it was a really, really rough year. It was probably my worst year of my career. So going into the 2022 season, I don't want to say I was disheartened, but I wasn't as excited for the season. But I had a decent indoor season, and it was okay first few outdoor races. And training was going relatively well. But my then boyfriend and now fiance, his dad suddenly passed away during this time. And so I think that took my life, if I'm going to just boil it down, it took it into perspective. And I said, is this really what I want to do anymore? Why am I doing this if I am still doing this? And what am I going to do about it? Jordan was over in Australia with his family, and it was a really terrible, traumatic experience. But it sort of made me step back and think, why am I doing this? Do I want to keep doing it? Am I enjoying it? And so I think because I had started to bat around that idea a few months prior, and then sort of being hit with a reality check, I suppose, if you will. That's sort of ultimately what I came to my decision. And as I said, I asked myself, well, why am I running? I ran because I wanted to see how much I could grow as a person, in addition to all the other competitions, travel, meeting new people, all those things. But I thought that my growth in the sport was done and I was ready to move on to the next thing. And I also had the fortune of retiring on my own terms, whereas I don't know if that's always necessarily the case. Some people have injuries that plague them for years. Some people might not financially be able to support themselves running anymore. So that was a blessing in itself, is that I was able to choose my retirement rather than being forced or pushed out the door.
Absolutely. I can 100% relate to that. I'm so thankful that I got to choose to retire on my own terms as well. And mm-hmm. I can see how when people don't get to do that, it feels like you have unfinished business and it's a lot mm-hmm. harder to let go of the sport at that level. Yeah. And I think it sounds like you had this moment, this traumatic experience that was incredibly difficult mm-hmm. to go through, that showed you there's more to life than running. And I think mm-hmm. that's something that at the highest level, people don't always have that life balance or don't mm-hmm. realize that. And when they're forced to retire, it's kind of this sudden like identity crisis, which I think there still is this identity shift that happens when you retire, yeah. whether you're ready for it or not. But mm-hmm. I think that's a very unique experience that you were able to choose that for yourself. And I know that it's a hard transition to go through. So you have on your social media, I love your Instagram. You post just such incredible content and really positive things about body image. So you've been really candid about experiencing those body shifts after retirement. And I can absolutely relate to this. I think it's sort of a double whammy of identity shift where you're like, mm-hmm. okay, not only am I no longer an elite athlete, but now I feel like I don't look like an elite athlete. And it's just yeah. this double thing. So tell us a little bit about what that retirement has looked like for you. And we'll get into your becoming a dietitian, which I'm so mm-hmm. excited to hear about. But
yeah.
what has that transition looked like for you in terms of navigating food and body image relationships?
Yeah, so I think, once again, I didn't realize how much I was struggling with it all until I was out of it, and even a few months afterwards. Like, I think some of my hardest body struggles was a couple months after I retired and my body started to shift, because I was so frustrated. I was like, why is it changing? Like, it shouldn't be changing. And like, of course it's going to change. I'm not working out for hours yes. and hours on end. And so, which that just showed like how our relationship with food and body image isn't just based on your sport or what you're doing athletically. It's something that does carry on with you your whole life, because some people might think like, oh, it's going to heal. I mean, I didn't even really consider my relationship with food as something that was something I needed to heal. But it doesn't just heal when you stop competing at an elite level. It's with you your entire life. And so after I retired, and I was so frustrated in how my body was changing, looking back on it, that was just an indication of how much my value and worth was in that number on the scale and in how I looked. So that sort of sparked a growth period that I didn't even realize that I needed, was that how can I get my value and worth and confidence from something that's not so appearance related and so weight related, which sounds so like narcissistic when I say it out loud, honestly. And it has been part of like the shift as well, but like your body is supposed to change because your priorities and goals have changed. And there was a time when I was still trying to work out to keep up with the body that I thought I needed to have or thought I wanted. But also within that shift, it is body changes, but it's also your goals and priorities are changing. So let your body change to align with those new goals, you know, and pursue other aspects of your life, whether it's a new career or a new hobby or a new relationship. Like, your body is supposed to fuel you through that. And so shouldn't we put our time and mental energy towards these new aspects of our life rather than just trying to break ourselves down. So I think that just knowing that your body is supposed to change, you're not a worse person if you gain some weight. Like, as long as you get your blood labs checked and you're moving a couple times a week and you're still eating your fruits and vegetables and proteins, like, you're fine, really. And if you are struggling with body image, then maybe start to analyze, like, well, is it because all my confidence and worth and value is this number on the scale or how I look, and how can I start to change that relationship, which takes a lot of work.
It really does. And you're so right that that relationship that we have with food and our body lasts well beyond our time in sport. And that's why I really encourage athletes, whether you're just starting or you're well into the sport, to really think about and evaluate your own relationship with food and body and be honest with yourself. You know, if it's something you're struggling with, you're not alone. That's a very common struggle, but it's something that's worth addressing, if anything, just to free up that mental energy, just reduce that food mm-hmm. noise, give yourself a little bit higher quality of life. And body changes are hard no matter what. They're not easy to navigate. So do you have any advice or words of wisdom for anyone listening who might be struggling with body changes?
I think for people who are either moving on from their sport, whether it's they've graduated or they're retired, I would say that continuing to criticize how you look in the mirror or the number on the scale, like, just think about how much better use of that time and mental energy can be spent, because it can be spent in more productive, fruitful, loving, creative ways. And then for the athlete, if they're really struggling with how their body is looking or changing, but they might not think they need to address that relationship because of if they think that what they're doing is right, or if it's the only way, or if they think they have to be disciplined, there's other ways to do it that will also help you grow in the mental, physical, physiological aspect. So, because that's what I would have thought if a dietitian had told me, like, you need to address your relationship with food, I'd be like, that's more of an emotional thing. I don't need to do that. Like, that's something I can worry about later on. But it does impact everything, because food is part of every aspect of our life.
Yeah, it really is. And that's such great advice, just thinking about how much better use there is for that energy that you're spending focusing so much on body and food. And there is life to be lived outside of that, which can be hard to pull yourself away from in the moment. But little steps towards, you know, moving away from things like body checking, like you mentioned, that's a really big mm-hmm. one that kind of keeps you in that mental cycle, focusing on other things that you appreciate your body for, or proud of your body for, and just acknowledging that your body is just the vessel that you're living life with. It's not mm-hmm. the end all be all, I think is really helpful. And yeah, your Instagram just has such great words of wisdom and insight. So anyone who's struggling, highly recommend following Alexa on Instagram. There's some really great stuff. And speaking of that relationship with food, you decided ultimately to get your master's degree in nutritional sciences and nutrigenomics and to go on to become a dietitian, which is amazing. So tell us about that decision. What inspired you to take on that career choice?
Yeah, I mean, I really struggled with food and body image, and I didn't want to do finance. And so I was like talking with my dad a few months after I had retired, and I was like, I really don't know what I want to do. I want to give back to the sport in some ways, but I don't think like coaching is really my calling. And he was like, why don't you go into nutrition? And I was like, why don't I go into nutrition? So it was like, it was a little hard to find a master's program that didn't require a Bachelor of Science, but I found one and I got it, and I spent 2 semesters getting all the prereqs that I needed for it. And ultimately I want to work with the young Alexas that were struggling, but maybe not knowing that they were struggling so much, and help them realize that, one, there is another way to do it that will make you as successful, if not more successful, in the short and long term.
Yeah, I love that. It resonates so much with that, just the giving back to the sport and wanting to help the young Alexas, the young Maddies, you know, not to make the same mistakes that we made or just to learn from ours. I think that's so special. And tell us, what is nutrigenomics? Tell people who don't know what that is, what was that degree like?
Yeah, so nutrigenetics and nutrigenomics is basically, it's more, I would say it's more important for like chronic disease states. But we have our genes that we get from our parents, and these genes are predisposed to, we might have a greater risk for certain disease states. So high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, things like that. But based off of the foods that you eat, you can more or less turn on and off these genes. So it could, depending on what you do eat, and if you get a DNA test, then you could alter your health for the long term. But there's also certain genes that might, for example, influence caffeine metabolism. So how does that look in terms of like performance and things like that? So it's looking at how genes not only influence how we metabolize certain foods, but how our foods can influence our DNA as well. So that's pretty cool. We had a few genetic classes. I don't know if I feel like super confident in it.
That's fair. But genetics is hard.
Genetics is hard, but it was some cool things to learn, and now I can put it on the end of my name with my degree.
That's awesome. And what I think is cool about that is it just really highlights that everyone is different. Like, just because you see somebody else doing something, that does not mean it's the right thing for you to be doing. We all have these really complex, like, genes and DNA and all this stuff that affects how our body will look, how we'll eat and respond to food. And there's just so many unique differences that I think a good takeaway from that is everyone is different, and what you need can be very different than what somebody else needs just purely because of genetics, which you maybe can control sometimes, but often can't really. Yeah.
I think I saw that genetics influence like 80% of how you look, which just goes to show that trying to alter your body image and body composition, you're most likely working against your body, which is like not what you want to be doing in pursuing athletics and sports.
Yes, that's so true. Most of the things we've been told will help our performance actually work against us, which a lot of the things we've talked about, like eating less or cutting things out, being restrictive, they don't help us become a better athlete. They usually worsen our performance. And a lot of times we're trying to change something that we cannot change because it's genetics.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which is amazing. And I love that you're doing that work. And I love to get another dietitian in this space. And with becoming a dietitian, doing all the work to become a dietitian, reflecting back on your work, you said you worked with a nutritionist. How can you speak to the difference between the two now that you have seen both sides of the coin?
So for those who don't know, to become a dietitian, you now have to get a master's, in addition to 1,000 internship hours, which are usually unpaid. So it's a bit elitist to be able to become a dietitian, I will say that. So some people, if they are nutritionists, it might just be because they don't have that flexibility or they don't have the financial freedom to be able to pursue a graduate program in addition to unpaid work for what's equivalent to like 6 months if you were to do it full time. So with that being said, though, my nutritionist that I worked with didn't, when I was telling him like I'm missing my period, I'm really struggling with weight, I think these are red flags that should have been looked at a deeper level that were just addressed very surface level. And that's not to say that he was doing it poorly. And that's not to say that all nutritionists would do that, but it is just, nutrition isn't surface level at all.
Yes, for sure. And that's such a good point. There it does require a certain amount of financial freedom and flexibility to become a dietitian. I max out my student loans to be able to do the dietetic internship year unpaid, and I'm still paying off student debt. You know, it's hard, and people aren't always in the position to be able to do that. But, you know, I think the idea of, like, there are nutritionists who are what are called degreed nutritionists. So they've gone through the undergraduate study. They have a background in nutritional sciences, maybe don't have the financial freedom to go on to become a dietitian, but they have a little bit more of a background in nutrition. I think it can just be so difficult because there's no licensing or regulating body for nutritionists. So we don't always know if they're qualified, if they have that background, if they don't. And like you said, it's nutrition is not surface level. And although it cannot becoming a dietitian isn't always accessible to everybody, I would argue it's similar in becoming like a doctorate of physical therapy or an MD, where that additional amount of studying does add that ability to really clinically analyze somebody. And like you said, being able to put those pieces together. So it's always fun talking to someone who's gone through the same thing. And I know there's a lot of flaws in the system of becoming a dietitian and just generally our healthcare as a whole. But it's always interesting hearing someone who's experienced kind of both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm real, because I didn't even know the difference when I had started this. I was like, I didn't even know that there were two different things. And so ultimately I am really glad that I went through all the work, because I think that if you ever want to work with athletes at the top level, you do need the dietitian credentialing, but it was a lot of work.
Yeah. It's a long time. It's a long, long time in school, a lot of work. But amazing that you completed all of it. And you said you're going to be taking your RD licensure exam here in about a month. So good luck on that. You're going to crush it. You're going to do great.
Thank you.
What are you doing today with running? What is running to you today?
I have been running very sparingly over the last couple of years. And my fiance is about a year out of retirement, but he is pursuing this like sub-18 5K goal. And so I was like, oh, I'll join in. So I am also going for sub-18 5K.
Awesome.
And just to add in a little bit more motivation, I am trying to beat my freshman high school time, which is 17:55. It's just fun and silly. So it's very lighthearted right now, which it took a really long time to get to that point, because I think after, especially for a sport like running, after you stop running, it's so easy to compare and like let your ego get in the way of enjoying running for what it can be and is. So like taking easy runs easy, not feeling like you always need to push all the time, not looking at the pace on the watch. It took a really long time to get to that point. And I would say I still probably run some runs too fast. And I think I've gotten past like the comparison of workouts and things like that, but it took a really long time to get running to be like enjoyable. And so it's just very lighthearted and fun. It's something that I do 5 days a week in the mornings, and then I can move on with the rest of my day, which as an elite athlete, it's, you don't move on for the rest of the day. It's like, okay, what am I doing for recovery? What am I doing for strength? What am I doing for XYZ? So yeah, it's just fun and silly right now, which I love so much.
That's so great. I love that running can still be there for you. And I say this all the time, but running can be there for you in every season of life, and it can look different in different times. And it's just so fun that you're able to have fun with it. And, you know, it's when you leave the sport sometimes on not a bad note, but with just kind of that like bad taste in your mouth of like, oh, I don't know, I just don't feel like I'm getting as much as I want out of the sport. It's cool to see how it then evolves and actually gives back more to you than you would have thought, and can still be this source of fun and joy and connection for you and your fiance. Like Nick and I run together all the time too, I make him run with me. but yeah, it's so fun to have that life balance, which doesn't really exist when you're running at the pro level, and getting to choose when you want to run. Like if you're doing something else, like you can be like, oh, I'm not going to run today, and it's not a big deal. Like, you get to have that life balance. So yeah, I love 100%. That you are finding that fun in running again. Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. I know that you've had such an incredible career as an athlete, and now you get to transition into working with athletes in a different way and giving back to the sport, which is so special. So before we get into our fun rapid fire questions, do you have any last thoughts or pieces of advice for athletes who are listening who might find themselves in a similar position to younger Alexa?
I think there's two things. I would say that, yes, weight is a performance in your is a factor in your performance, but so are about 24 other things. And if you are struggling, if you are continuing to blame yourself, and if you are constantly weighing in, there is another way you can do it that will provide long-term and short-term success.
Absolutely. It is one of about 80 factors that impact performance, but it's the one that takes up the most time and energy and thought. So I love your advice of just looking for that self-worth outside of appearance, really focusing on long-term, taking care of your body, you know, doing things the right way. Like you said, there's no shortcuts. You can't sustain doing things by cutting corners.
Yeah, 100%. And like, maybe if I had a healthy relationship with food, I'd still be running. You never know. But knowing that this isn't just about like your relationship with food, it's so much more than that, and how it affects your stress and anxiety and mental state and confidence and body image. It's everything. And so if we can start to focus on that as an athlete, just think about how much better you're going to be, let alone with your long-term health and all its implications.
Exactly. It can only help you. And it's, yeah, been so fun just to follow your career. Fun fact, we were both in the 2017 US champs in the 1500. I think we were in the same heat.
So you were in the 1500 back then.
Oh yeah, I did. That was I refused to run anything longer, but I finally came around to it. But so funny that we're both here today as dietitians and almost dietitian. So thank you so much for sharing your experience. I think this was just such a great conversation, so many valuable things. And I'd love to wrap up with our fun rapid fire questions if you're ready.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what is your go-to pre-run snack?
Right now, it's banana and peanut butter.
Love it. Just that's a easy, classic.
Simple. Yep.
Good. What would you pick for your last meal?
A few things. One, I would do these buttermilk biscuits that my grandpa makes.
Yum.
And his ribs. And then one of my favorite food combinations of all time, which some people can't really get over, is steamed broccoli and mayonnaise. It's like my favorite thing in the world.
I have not heard of that before.
Oh my god, it's so good. So that would be like my favorite last meal.
That is a first for sure. That is a one of a kind last meal, and I love that.
It like brings out a new flavor that I can't even describe, but it has to be like the full fat Heisman's mayo. It can't be anything else.
Yeah, not like the like gross Miracle Whip.
Mm-mm, no.
Interesting. Okay, I'll have to give that a try. I can't judge it until I've tried it, so maybe I'll give that a try. Amazing. What is your favorite dessert?
I'd probably say chocolate chip cookie dough ice cream is usually my go-to.
Yeah. I love a good cookie dough ice cream. What is your least favorite food?
I'm not really a picky eater. I eat almost everything, but I cannot get over olives. Like, I've never liked them. I'll probably never like them. I can't get over it.
I try like once a year to get myself to like olives, and it just, it hasn't worked yet.
Yeah, I always pick them off pizza. Like, I'm just like, it's not doing it for me. And I don't, like, I can get my sodium somewhere else. It's not like I'm missing a lot of nutrient value from not eating olives.
Agreed. I can live without olives. I'm good.
Yeah.
If you could travel anywhere in the world for a food experience, where would you go?
I'd probably say, like, the Mediterranean. I really love like Greek food and other Mediterranean countries that I can't think of right now.
Minus the olives.
Yeah, minus the olives.
Amazing. Yeah, the Mediterranean is a common one that they just have such incredible food over there.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is your go-to lazy meal?
I'd probably say like rice and scrambled eggs if it's gonna be a meal with like some zucchini and broccoli. I try, like, even in my lazy meals, I'll try and get like carb protein vegetables. So that's like the easiest protein you can really get if you don't already have a prepped protein, in my
Yep.
eyes at least.
That's a great one. I love a good like egg rice bowl. That's some of my favorites. I love to do that for breakfast sometimes too, if I want something savory.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Good. And last one, what is your favorite coffee or tea drink?
I've been really liking double shot espressos with like half and half. So it's like sort of
Yum.
like a cortado, but a little bit
Yeah.
creamier. That's sort of been my go-to lately.
Yum. That sounds amazing. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here, Alexa. If people want to keep up with you, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Alexa Ephraimson and hopefully around in the running world doing something nutrition related eventually.
Yay.
Yeah,
Yes.
we'll get to that
Amazing.
part in a few months.
Well, we'll be on the lookout for your announcement of what's next, but congratulations on everything, and we will be cheering for you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to keep up with Alexa, you can find her on Instagram at Alexa Ephraimson. Next week's episode will be a Q&A, so if you would like to submit a question to be answered on air, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.